You're listening to an SBS News podcast.
The former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, now known as North Macedonia, has urged the world to support US President Donald Trump's unconventional diplomacy. Foreign Minister Tim Chomulchensky is the first politician from his country to visit Australia in 15 years. He met with Foreign Minister Penny Wong to mark 30 years of diplomatic ties. In this exclusive interview, he told SBS's Sarah Tomeska, Mr. Trump is a peacemaker.
As a government, we have engaged with the Trump administration very early on. I had the privilege of joining Prime Minister Mitsotakis at the inaugural events in Washington. We spoke with a lot of the individuals that hold key positions within the Trump administration. And what I can say is that from a values-based perspective, we share common challenges and common goals with this new administration. The world needs to become a safer place. We need to be much more pragmatic when we deal with issues of foreign policy. And in that sense, what I will say is that in light of the continuity of the strategic partnership between our nation and the United States, we will continue to be engaged with Washington, and we will continue to help Washington as Washington helps us and our region to move the world forward so that the world becomes a safer place and a more economically progressive place to live.
So, do you agree with the assessment of Viktor Orban that Trump will bring peace?
That is becoming very evident, especially you see it in the last few days, that President Trump and his administration are committed to global peace. Some might see the methods that they use as unconventional. But what has conventional diplomacy brought us? It has brought us more war and more conflicts in the last few years on a global level. So I think that the first few days of the activities we've seen by President Trump, by Secretary of State Rubio, by key people surrounding the Trump administration, such as Special Envoy Rick Grenell, have proven themselves to be extremely effective. And in that sense, what I can say is that the Macedonian government will be supportive of these efforts by the United States.
When it comes to Ukraine, Donald Trump has said he wants to see a deal done. Do you think that it's inevitable that the Ukrainians will have to accept a new border along the current front line?
I think it's unfair for me to speak what the solution will be. That is a solution that must be left up to the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian government. But we've seen, especially in the last few days, very effective engagement by President Trump and his administration. And we've seen a very positive reception of that engagement by President Zelensky.
But would that set a dangerous precedent, particularly in the Balkans, where there has been a very recent history of war, of ethnic tensions, and of territorial disputes?
What we've always said is that any solution needs to be in line with international public law. And I think that all parties involved will work to attain that. And it needs to be a solution that is acceptable to the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian government above all. The Russian aggression is something that will go down as a very dark stain on the Russian nation in terms of what they have done in Ukraine. But I think everybody agrees, including primarily the Ukrainian government, that peace must be found as soon as possible, and the young people who are part of these war efforts, the unnecessary lives lost, are without a doubt the most regrettable part of this whole war.
I think North Macedonia is the fifth largest contributor of aid to Ukraine per capita. Is that correct?
We are one of the top five contributors of NATO member states per capita, yes, to Ukraine. It's important for strategic reasons. First of all, it's important because what Russia did is in defiance of the key principles of international public order and international public law. That is why we say we stand, especially considering that we are a small landlocked nation. And upholding these standards is of the utmost importance to us. That is why we have said, in principle, we stand with Ukraine. There have also been times in the past where our nation has shared a periods of conflict. And one of the nations that has come first to our support in those times has also been Ukraine. So we will continue to stand with Ukraine politically, economically, militarily, especially considering our roles as members of NATO, and to give them all types of support within the context of the means that we have as a nation.
I guess since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, we have seen a resurgence of nationalism across the Balkans and most closely to North Macedonia and Kosovo. Do you hold any genuine concerns that a broader regional conflict could erupt?
I think that there are political security risks that exist in our region that we need to follow very closely. The relationship between Serbia and Kosovo is one of them. The internal political dynamic in Bosnia and Herzegovina is a second risk that exists. I share your view that there have been extremely serious attempts at Russian malign influence in the entire region of not just the Western Balkans, but I would go either further in a wider context of Southeastern Europe as well. And these are trends that worry us, trends that we follow. But I do believe that if we continue to uphold the principles which we stand behind as an alliance, as members of NATO, then there will be stability in our region. What is also necessary for further stabilizing the region of the Western Balkans is delivery on the part of the European Union. When it comes to the accession of the Western Balkan states as full members of the European Union, and sometimes that clarity has been lacking in the last few years. What we are hopeful for is that the new European Commission has set itself to be committed to enlargement. We've also seen it from many of the member states, including the group of Friends of Western Balkans, who are also committed to enlargement. So I think that in light of all of these issues, the role of NATO, the role of the European Union, and the role of the United States must be to help us stabilize the region and close many of the risks that I agree do exist at this moment.
North Macedonia has long been trying to enter the European Union. Do you see that as your country's priority, or is the relationship with the United States more important?
For us this year, we celebrate 30 years of diplomatic relations with Australia, which is one of the reasons why I am here in this country for this bilateral visit. But this year is also, I would say, another sobering anniversary for us. And that is 20 years since we gained candidate status for to become an EU member state. And we have shared many unfair and I would say even unjust hurdles on this path. We are a nation that was forced to change its name, that has made several constitutional changes, a nation that even changed its flag, all for the promise of a European future. And sadly, the European Union has not allowed us at this moment to even begin accession negotiations. And we have engaged and spoken very openly with the EU member states as well as with institutions in Brussels about this. We deserve to begin accession negotiations as soon as possible. Becoming an EU member state, a full EU member state, is a key strategic priority for our nation. We are one of the rare nations that has its foreign policy 100% aligned with the common foreign and security policy of the European Union. On the other hand, to further answer your question, yes, the strategic partnership with the United States is, I would say, of equal importance. And we will continue to realize both of these foreign policy trajectories with an equal importance, both becoming an EU member state, but also upholding the strategic partnership with the United States.
I guess part of becoming an EU member state is meeting certain standards, and corruption is one of them. In 2023, we saw North Macedonia rank 76th out of 180 countries on Transparency International's Corruptions Index. That's a 2-spot improvement from 2022. You speak to anyone over there, they will tell you that corruption is a very normalised part of life and of doing business and of doing politics. Has your government taken adequate steps to reduce corruption?
Without a doubt, this is the biggest challenge that our new government formed 8 months ago has. Tackling corruption, both high-level corruption, but corruption also on the mid and low level of governance. And it is corruption that is there in the judiciary, corruption that exists in the public administration, and corruption that has even gone rampant in the business sector. And I think that there is no bigger priority of our government than tackling corruption and rooting out corruption. We are implementing a systematic approach to this. It is not something that can be solved overnight, but what I can say is that the first indicators coming from our work are absolutely evident. There is very obvious engagement by government institutions when it comes to high-level corruption. We give the example of a former deputy prime minister being prosecuted for a very high-level case, but it will also be up to the judiciary to deliver on these cases. Our role is to create preconditions. Our role as representatives of government institutions is to investigate and uncover high-level corruption, but judiciary also needs to do its part in delivering. And I think the biggest testament to our government, when its mandate ends 4 years and when we will go into a new election process, will be what we will do with the corruption in the country. Corruption and good governance have implications on the economy. They have implications on labor markets. They have huge implications in terms of attracting foreign direct investments. We fundamentally understand this, and we will be committed to this effort.
Well, on that, the former leader of your party, Nicola Gruevski, has been in exile in Hungary since 2018. The judiciary has found him guilty of phone tapping, of corruption, of money laundering. Have you made any representations to extradite him so he can serve his sentence?
There are ongoing processes within the systems that exist between the two countries. And what I can say is that this is not a decision that is a decision that at the end of the day is being made by our government, but the Hungarian government on the other side.
But are you seeking his extradition?
What I follow, there are ongoing processes that are being led by the Ministry of Justice.
But as foreign minister, you don't make those representations?
No, this is an area that is under the autonomy of the Ministry of Justice and the judicial system of the country.
Okay. I guess the other point on him is he took North Macedonia in a very sort of pro-Putin, anti-Western direction. That's clearly not the public position that you're putting forward. But is there still behind the scenes sympathies towards Vladimir Putin and towards Russia?
What I can say is, first of all, when it comes to the assessment of previous governments of Vomorod Dopomene, there are governments that had their own faults, but also governments that made very serious investments in the economy and infrastructure and were fairly successful. What I can tell you is that our society is committed to what we can label as pro-Western values. In huge numbers, our society is pro-EU, our society is pro-membership in NATO, and our society values the special relationship that we have with the United States. You see this in what our people view, both through public opinion polls, but also in terms of how they vote. And as I said, as a government, we have proven this not just in what we say, but in how we behave and how we act. Our membership in NATO and our 100% alignment with the EU's common foreign and security policy and defense policy, the fact that we became the first country a few months ago to sign a defense and security partnership with the European Union. I signed this myself as foreign minister with the EU's high representative for foreign affairs. These are all testaments that our government and our people who, through voting and parliamentary representation, stand behind our government, view these values as the values for moving this country forward.
You're a very young foreign minister. You're only 35 years old. I suppose the first decade of your life, you would have seen the collapse of Yugoslavia, subsequent wars, the economic impacts that continue to this day. So how significant is it that the Balkans as an entirety, and North Macedonia in particular, turns a page and actually has a more democratic and more stable government?
I think the last, the post-socialist years after the breakup of Yugoslavia, the fall of the Berlin Wall, have been transformational for our region. I also think we could have been much more effective in those years of transformation. I say there have been governments in our country, in our region, that have done good things, but sadly, they haven't been quick and effective enough, especially fighting these issues such as corruption, issues such as pollution, issues such as reforming our education and healthcare systems. So I think previous generations in politics could have done more. And that, I see this as a key role of our generation in politics, because we have seen negative implications of this transformation, but we have also had the privilege of living abroad. I myself have spent many years of my life living in nations such as the United States and Canada, and I have seen firsthand how democracy works, how market economies work, and what we need to do to transform our societies for the better. So we need to take the positive experiences and develop them, but we also need to learn from the negative experiences. I personally believe our region has a very bright future. A lot of very young, well-educated, progressive people live in our region, and they have the inherent need to move the region forward. And that is why I think we need to understand that we don't have dual citizenship. I am Macedonian, and I want my future to be in my nation and my son's future to be in my nation. And in that sense, we have to move forward for real and authentic change, not change that is just in words, but we need to start as young politicians practicing what we preach.
Do you think there is an appetite for change among the public?
That is very evident. And we saw it, for example, in the last election results in our country a few months ago, where citizens predominantly voted for change, but also voted for rooting out corruption. And that is maybe one of the most interesting parts. About 10 years ago, any public opinion poll in our country, in our region, would have shown you that the key issues were economy, labor market, jobs. Now the key issue is corruption, something that you mentioned in one of your previous questions. And we have to understand that this is what citizens are asking for. This is what our nation needs. We saw the necessity for change with the election results, but now our role as a government is to deliver on what the citizens are asking for.
Do you want to see, as Foreign Minister, more of the Macedonian diaspora in other countries come back and contribute to North Macedonia now?
Without a doubt. And this is one of the reasons for my visit to Australia. And one of the things that I said in the many meetings I had with our diaspora representatives is I understand how difficult it is sometimes for many of these people. They are physically here in Australia, but with their hearts and minds, a lot of the time, they're back home in our own country, in our wonderful cities, because their friends are there, their families are there. And we want to engage with them so that they come back to invest, that they spend their holidays in our country. But what I also told them is that we understand as a government that we need to create an adequate environment for these investments so that they feel that their investments are safe, that their investments will progress, and that their investments will not be susceptible to issues such as corruption. So I think that our role as government is, among other things, to engage with this diaspora, which, as I said, is extremely successful in all walks of Australian life, but also to further engage with our very strong diasporas in the United States, in Canada, all around Europe, and all around the world.